He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning for this week's show of Car Keys with mostly Robin Leach and Jada Markin. We are in the middle of maybe the early part or middle of fall, and the weather's getting colder, and I want to start with a couple of topics about cold weather and your vehicles. First thing I want to tell the listeners today is that I have been conducting a study of air pressure in tires on the basis of the outside temperature. And I did this by setting all the tires on one of my Jeeps at 35 pounds at an approximate temperature on the day that I did this of 38 degrees outside. I have an inflator that you can set the pressure you want it to go on and off at, or off at when it gets to the tire pressure. So they were all fairly equally set. And the Jeeps of current production have a wonderful tire pressure monitoring feature on their vehicles. And if you find it in your menu of adjustments you can do on your dash, you can see what the temperature is in each tire, whether the car is stopped or moving as you're driving down the road. It can be distracting, which is not a good thing to do, as we talk on this show about distracted driving. But for this particular topic, I wanted to cover, produce a knowledge base that would be informative for us to figure out what to do with your tires. Because when the weather gets cold, the tire pressures go down, and then when the weather gets hot, they go up. And when you drive a vehicle from start, they start at one pressure, and they, as the tires warm up, the pressure in the tires will go up as well. So this is what I can transmit to this week's show's listeners. I started out this morning's show temperature, which was in the very low 30s and even high 20s. When I got in my car, in the Jeep that I set the tire pressure at 35, at 38 degrees, and they were all showed 32 pounds, well, between 31 and 32 pounds on the four tires in this morning's temperature. By the time I reached and drove approximately 7 miles to our broadcasting area, they had risen to 35 pounds, more or less, 35 in one or two, 36 in another, 34 in a third, and so on. And that's another thing that you will notice if you want to follow this kind of manuscript and do the same thing with your vehicle. If you can see what the tire pressures are as you're driving, they will vary as you drive and not necessarily stay exactly all the same pressure all the time when you're moving, or even when you're standing still and the sun is on one side of the car and the shade is on the other. But the other day, after I had first done this setting at 35, it went up to 54 degrees, and the tire pressures went up as high as 39 pounds in one of them, and 38 and 37 in the others, and they sat there for the most of that day. So if you have set your tire pressures, or anybody that does this regularly, the general tire pressures I find in most of the vehicles, not SUVs with special tires on them necessarily, or trucks, is somewhere between 32 and 34 pounds, as noted on stickers, which can be found in most vehicles, either on the door jam, most of the time the driver's door jam, or on the gas flap, if you have a gas flap, a cover on your gas tank filler neck. And therefore, most of the time, as temperatures vary, they're going to be going up and down from this setting that you may have set at whatever temperature you remember to set it at. If you had set your tires at 34 or 35 pounds when the temperatures were 75 degrees or 70 degrees and up, you're going to find at 33 degrees they're going to be down 4 to 5 pounds a tire. And if they get down into the 20s, it is really time to probably add air to your tires before it gets even colder. Not that they won't roll at 22 degrees or 15 degrees, but the pressures will go down. They won't necessarily go flat, but it is not good to run tires underneath either very low below the recommended pressure or very high above the recommended pressure.
So the moral of the story is it's time to check your tire pressure.
That's the moral of this lecture is it's time to check your tires, guys. But I would wait till it's below 30 degrees or more, because if you do it at 40, you're going to want to do it again when the temperatures are regularly in the 20s, maybe later on beyond this show's edition.
This is where I have a little beef with my beloved Volkswagen Touareg. Because it's the vehicle is rated to tow 7,700 pounds, I think, which is a lot for an SUV. The recommended rear tire pressure is 39 pounds. The problem with that, when you put the tire pressure at 39 pounds day in, day out, is that the tires wear unevenly in the center, and you go through rear tires like you go through...
Like a knife goes through butter, Jay?
Something like that. So anyway, so I tend to put, you know, less pressure. I try to equalize the pressures, and usually go somewhere around 35 all around. The problem with that is as soon as winter comes around, the warning will go on if there is a delta of 6 pounds. So as soon as my tire pressures are below 33 pounds in the rear, you know, the system goes on and the warning goes on until you put back
enough air.
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway, that's just a little beef.
There's another beef I have with another car that's German-based, and that's the Audis. The tire pressure monitors on the Audis are not anywhere near as effectively efficient and interesting to watch, as they do not give you the tire pressures in the tires anywhere I can find in the menu. And when a tire goes down below a spec, let's say 29 pounds, as you said, you had a delta of 6 pounds more or less in your Touareg. I guess that's the way it is in maybe some of the German cars as well. You can find out which tire. It doesn't tell you which tire is low, except very briefly when you turn the ignition to the start mode, and these are push-button start mode modes that you have on your dashboards on the newest vehicles. And if you are not looking at the dash as the computer sets up the dashboard on a German car and many cars, you will miss that it says the left rear tire or the left front tire needs checking because the tire is below the recommended pressure. It flashes, as far as I can see, less than 2 seconds if you're not watching it. And then all it says is there's a yellow light, caution light on the dash that says low pressure that indicates a tire figure, green, and it's yellow, so it means there's some tire, but you don't know which one, that needs to be checked.
And it's then German you put engineering. Why make it simple when you can make it very complex?
That is right, German engineering. Why make it simple when you can make it complex and annoying? Because then when you put the, you find that, you first of all, you have to find out which tire it is by using a pressure gauge before you put air in, because you don't want to overinflate any of the tires.
I just don't think you should be driving Audis. You should just stick to your Jeeps.
I do. That's somebody else sticks to the Audis. But in any event, I have to maintain the tires in that car properly for this other person. And then when you fill the tires up, you got to go into a very complex menu, find where the tire pressure settings are under a settings, I think, settings index, and then you have to push a button and hold, and it automatically sets the new tire pressures, presumably to the specs, but you don't know whether they're all at, let's say, 33 pounds around or what they are if you filled up one tire that was at 29 and you set it at 33. You don't even know what to set it at, actually, to fill it up, because you can't find what the other tires are set at without using a pressure gauge outside the car. What a nuisance. But back to checking your tires right now as the weather gets colder is this week's safety recommendation on this show.
There we go. Moving on. I was talking about my Touareg for 2 seconds there, and for the dozen of us who have Touaregs in the whole
that's north, about the whole population, you're right.
In the northeast seaboard, although the Touareg has not been sold in the U.S. since 2017, it had been sold in the rest of the world, but Volkswagen finally pulled the plug on it, very sadly. It was a great vehicle.
This year?
The third generation of it, which we'd never got here in the U.S., was a fantastic car. It just was an $80,000 to $100,000 vehicle that Volkswagen could not sell in the U.S. And I did a little research and looked at the history of the car, and it came about in the late 90s, early 2000s is when the Touareg was planned and then, you know, designed and executed under Dr. Piëch, who was, I think, the nephew of Dr. Porsche and at the time the head of the Volkswagen Group. And he had grandiose ideas of moving Volkswagen's the
line of cars
upscale. And, yep. And, you know, with the Touareg and the Volkswagen Phaeton, those were great vehicles, but it just never got any traction. And having luxury brands within the group, whether it be Porsche or Audi, Volkswagen was left to keep making Econoboxes. And I'm being a little facetious here because obviously they make more.
Well, what was the
cars.
Porsche match to the Touareg in the Porsche lineup?
The Cayenne.
Cayenne, yes, okay.
Which, by the way, and this has nothing to do with anything, Porsche is coming out with an electric Cayenne in the weeks, if not months, to come.
Okay, well, can we go on?
Sure, we can go on.
I'd like to just finish with some cold weather tips besides the tire lecture I just gave everybody. Check your windshield washer bottles and make sure that you have you refill them with washing fluid that will withstand, I would recommend, 25 below degrees minimum for our weather, which last year, as we know, was filled with ice-filled streets and driveways because the weather was so cold that any liquid material that fell from the sky didn't disappear for long periods. And while it was great for snowmaking, which doesn't have anything to do with this car show, it was cold enough to freeze the windshield washer fluid in a couple of my vehicles. And I don't know why they will freeze, let's say, in between the lines between the reservoir and the windshield wipers dispensing area or the nozzles that flow it on. But it seems to happen. I found that I was putting in 20 fluid that was rated for minus 20, but the temperatures were right around zero when my windshield washers would not work. And I do not know whether they would have worked better with 25 below zero rating on the windshield washer fluid, but the fluid bottle was not frozen, but the windshield washer hoses seemed to freeze. I didn't think wind chill would create that kind of effect on windshield washer fluid if it was designed to withstand up to minus 20 or minus 25 degrees before freezing. But besides having your windshield washer reservoir full, you should be sure that you've got fluid that is. The standard rating in most areas at garages is minus 20, but they also have some that is good to minus 35, and those are for states like Minnesota and countries like Canada up in the north where the temperatures can go down well below 20 degrees below zero at nighttime temperatures and even daytime temperatures. Get to tires. I've checked the tire depth on the treads of some of my tires, and there are a couple of vehicles which I will definitely not use in snowstorms unless I replace the tires before snowstorms occur, because they have worn down to probably where the wear indicators are parallel to the rest of the depth of the tread, and that is telling me that they are not going to be of much effect in snowy conditions on the roads, therefore being very dangerous to drive the vehicles at anything besides creeping speeds. Jay, you can jump in now.
Well, now we were lucky to get two, almost three lectures for the price of one.
Yes, we did.
This week. I just wanted to talk a little bit about fall driving and the fact that we are getting to the end of entertainment, fun, driving season. And at the track this weekend, we had the third annual MiataCon. And this was a gathering of all Miatas. The Mazda Miata has been a sports car since, you know, that's been sold by Mazda here in around the world, actually, since 1989. And it's really become a cult car like few others. And there was, at the track, there was a car show on Friday and Saturday, and also several groups of racing on track. It was kind of interesting because there's two different worlds, the car show world and the racers world. And kind of what I find a little sad is there's really no connection between the two groups of people. And you know, both are obviously auto enthusiasts, but everybody was doing their thing at the track. And so there were, I don't know, there must have been several hundred Miatas at the track. Some were purely stock. Some are totally goofy. One had burned in a garage fire and had been restored only to the extent that it was made street legal, but it was basically had a melted hood, melted, everything that was plastic was melted, the lights were melted. So it's kind of a carnival a Halloween presentation of cars. But it was fun, and it's great to see the enthusiasm that people have for these cars. And I saw one car, and it was a red original Miata, and I walked up to the owner, who was an older gentleman, and asked him how long he had owned the car. And he said, well, I ordered it new in 1989. 110,000 miles, all original, and it was serial number 801.
Wow.
If this person is listening to us, and I just think it's very cool to kind of know the story behind cars, and that's where you know a lot of people find the value in cars is you know the story, the pedigree, the whether it be a famous car or having belonged to somebody famous or having some kind of history. I think that cars that stay in the same family for decades, it's a pretty cool thing. Also, there were a bunch of aftermarket parts manufacturers and sellers. You know, the original Miata aftermarket part supplier is a company called Moss. But since then, there have been, you know, gazillion others. And it was pretty cool to see people just go up to vendors and buy new parts. And some people were taking some parts off their old cars and throwing them in the trash cans. And I actually know somebody was going around the trash cans trying to rescue Miata parts.
Well, Jay, I'd like to jump in. I have a VW van, as you know. It is original to me back in 2000, and it has 135,000 miles on it, and there are rust spots around. The gas cap is rusting away, and the rocker panel's got some severe rust on it, and I hope it doesn't rust out from under me as I'm driving down the road sometime. But as luck would have it, or jealousy would luck would have it, in my summer vacation area of Westport, Mass., a neighbor to where I am drove up in a what looked like a showroom condition new black Eurovan like mine, and it made me think about how that was maintained versus how I have not maintained my van. And
yeah,
so that goes to your comment about the Mazdas you saw over there at the track. It was showroom condition, this van. It has only 60,000 miles on it, and I told the guy, when he wants to sell it, let me know.
Why? No, you need to restore yours. Get to
no, it, mine's not restorable. Anyways, we don't need to discuss that on the show.
Okay.
But this is it is fun to see how people keep their cars. And when you go to an event like you went to where there were, what, would you say 100 Miatas around or that many? Or how many would you think
were
there?
Oh, yeah, there were at least, yeah, there were more than that, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all colors and all, as you said, goofy restorations or adjustments. And
some are
and
very just, goofy. Some are really cool. Some are really track-oriented. You know, suspension parts, roll bars. Others had superchargers on them. Some had turbos.
Yeah.
People have put, GMLS Corvette engines in Miatas.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They fit just...
They just fit perfectly in the Benji Bay of a Miata?
Perfectly.
And what do you think it does to the 50-50 weight ratio front to rear?
Obviously
I think it disappears.
It changes the balance of the car, but I've never talked to anybody who had done the conversion, but I've read about them. We've seen them. They've been tested in magazines.
And, yes, correct.
They actually drive pretty well. It shies away from the whole concept of the Miata. The idea
yes.
of the Miata was that it was meant to be a light, not very powerful, but light, simple, fun car. And the current generation that's been around since 2016, which is the fourth generation, the ND, so there's been NA, B, and C, and now we're on the ND, I did drive one a couple years ago, and they drive exactly like the original ones do. They feel tinny, they shake and they rattle, they're light, they're fun. They're not significantly faster than they were originally, and that's why you see so many older ones. And I just missed buying one locally, a second gen, that was for sale for under $5,000, and I should have just bought it. And I just hesitated, and of course it was gone.
And it was gone.
It was gone. It was a nice car, but there are plenty around. I read an article recently about comparing the evolution of the Mustang and the Miata, and when the Miata came out in 89 or 90, the price of the two cars was about the same. You could get a Mustang with a V8 for, I think the price was around $14,000. And for about the following 10 years, the base price of a Miata and the base price of a Mustang were about the same. And then the difference just went, skyrocketed as the Mustang became bigger, heavier, more powerful, the price went up, and the price of the Miata stayed,
more or less stable.
Yes, and today you can buy a new Miata for around $30,000. Great cars. I read up on the story about them, biological father, this automotive journalist, Bob.
He died
Hall,
recently, I believe.
No, that's Tom Metano, who was the original designer, who died recently. And anyway, great story, very
well, as we all know, cars have gotten a lot heavier during our lifetimes from the days of old when the Miatas were the sports car to have, and the RX-7s, which I own, one of Phil and I still own, and how much lighter they all were, because there weren't airbags, there weren't heavier doors with side impact protection, and sizes kept creeping up as well. And now they've gotten to the days where we have the electric vehicles, which are faster than anything non-electric full drive in most cases, except maybe for a Corvette and some other high-performance European and American cars. But they're so heavy, the electric cars are so heavy, but you don't feel it, except it does help them, I think, stay on the road very effectively because of their weight.
Well,
do you notice it when you're driving your electric cars and your experience as against what a Touareg is or any fossil fuel car similar in size.
Well, we know electric cars are heavier, but I'll get back to the weight and why cars are heavier in a second. But the center of gravity of an electric car is fairly low. I've seen rollover tests. You know, the when they do the safety test and they hit a car from the side and they just send it rolling.
They send a hit car rolling, right? They don't roll.
Yeah, correct. And most cars will just roll a number of times. And then I remember seeing that with, I think it was a Tesla, and the car just rolls like once and then falls back and then rolls back on its and inevitably lands on its right side, you know, on its four wheels. But back to why cars are heavier, I think it's pretty simple. I mean, the cars are also a lot safer than they were 30, 40 years ago. I remember riding the first time I rode with you in your Mazda RX-7. I saw that first turn coming, and I tried not to remember that we were on 14-inch tires that were the width of a bicycle tire, and you driving the car and thinking, what happens if we go off the road? Cars are much safer now. We know tires. Everything is bigger, but also much safer.
Yes, much safer indeed. But annoyingly complex electronically, as we have talked about as well. The simplicity of the old days with knobs and everything, and no computers running the dashboards, and just seat belts, no airbags. Is long gone, and you don't want to get hit in one of those by anything that is constructed today the way it's constructed, because you probably won't stand a chance of having the car come out being repairable. These old cars, right?
Correct.
Okay. So anything else at Lime Rock besides the Mazda sort of event? Were they able to drive their cars around the track,
The car show cars owners were allowed to take their car for a couple laps, what they call parade laps.
Right.
But that's at low speed and no passing, and it's literally a parade lap or two. I don't know how many laps they did. But yes, yesterday was also the last car show of the year for that FCP Euro organizes, and these are car shows that that happen at the track on Sundays a handful of times a year. I think there's no charge to go. Anybody can go, and this company has the ability to snap their fingers and bring in hundreds of cars. And yesterday was a BMW and Mini gathering. And again, some very, very nice cars. I was there in the pit lane. There was also Bring a Trailer was also present and had a few cars there. They had a racing BMW from 1988. They had an original 1989 or 1990 BMW M3 in pristine original condition. And again, just a lot of history unfolding in front of your eyes, and some people just there with their Series 5 and Series 7, just regular sedans. But you know, just a very different people with different cars. Yeah. Some purely stock, some very modified, some quite original. You know, and people try to gather together, like the guys with wagons will stick together. So that was the last of their shows.
Well, let's just talk about leaves on roads, wet roads, or as they are falling like snowflakes in a lot of cases around our listening area. Still, the trees have not totally de-leafed themselves, although they are getting very thinly, certainly close to it. Every time the wind blows, another 90% of whatever's left on a tree seems to descend to the ground, and if they end up on roads. And in shady roads, and it's wet and it's cold, the leaves don't necessarily blow away just because the wind is blowing. And they can be, on curves, on roads, can be as dangerous as snow is in the wintertime when the snow's falling. So you just need to drive, everybody needs to drive a little bit slower if the roads are not totally clear, and if your tires are not totally got deep treads, and if there's nothing else that would distract you from driving too fast on the road. That's another safety tip.
We're getting a lot of safety tips from Robin this week.
Well, it's that time to think about it.
And it's about time to wrap it up, too.
Okay, well, with that in mind...
let's go rake leaves.
Let's go rake leaves off the roads, and let's check the tire pressures going forward. If you've got more than one car, check them all, because they're all going to have gone down about the same amount if you're driving more than one car at any given time in the season. Until next time, we are Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach.
All right.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.